Welcome to the Toffee Blues, your source for all things Everton, and welcome to another edition of the Toffee Blue View podcast, where I'm, of course, standing in for Jerry Gibson. The show must go on, and it's going to be a good one. We're going to be doing a season rewind, and alongside before that, I'm joined by the two McAllisters, Messrs. Paul and Terry. As far as season rewind goes, it's a format that you're going to see a lot more of over the next few weeks, of course, as you probably know by now. As of last night, we've gone into lockdown here in the United Kingdom, so as a result, there's very little to look ahead to in the near future as far as football is concerned. So seeing as there's no football to look forward to, we're going to look back instead. This show is also going to feature the If You Know Your History quiz, in which I'll be pitting myself against Paul later on in the show. So stay tuned for that if you're listening to the podcast before this show is out. But first things first, how are you doing, lads? How you've been? Have you been spending your first day of national lockdown?
I've been in lockdown for a couple of weeks, to be honest, before this coronavirus really picked up steam. But I don't mind it too much. I'm a bit of a hermit a lot of the time, so I'm finding ways to cope. But I am starting to miss football now, and I'm starting to miss the little things that you take for granted, like just being able to go to the gym or being able to just go and walk around the town centre freely and go in whatever shops you want to go in. Yeah. I really hope we get this under control and things go back to normal quite quick, because there's only so much you can do when you're sat in your house. You can watch Netflix, you can play PlayStation or Xbox, but when you're like me and you've been doing that for weeks anyway, you want to go out. You want to go outside and get a bit of sun on your skin. So yeah, I'm glad to talk to you, and I'm hoping that everyone's, you know, managing to cope through this difficult period.
That's it. We'll all be saving money on Factor 50 anyway, so. So still got God help whoever, whatever idiots out there, like stockpiling Factor 50.
I know. I mean, you can still go in your back garden when the sun does eventually come back, but
true.
Yeah, but you can't unless you're getting it off Amazon, you're not getting anything. I'm good as well. I mean, I'm only been on lockdown since yesterday, and I would have to be on lockdown for a long time before I started getting fed up of it. I could spend a year in my house if I had to. I'm one of them people. But I'll tell you one thing though, on the football side of things, when you know this was slowly starting to build up steam and the ideas were floating around with what we can do with the Premier League, and or we'll continue the games behind closed doors, I was dead against it, bang against it, going, no, it'd be terrible. Home teams will lose their advantage and so on and so forth. Your hands off for that now. A couple of weeks is a long time, so I'm at the point now where if you could fast forward to that, I'd do anything for it, because I'm missing the football a lot. You can't even get excited looking on social media or the usual news sites, because you just know nothing's happening. There's no serious transfer stuff going on, because you know, I'm sure phone calls can take place, but no one knows when the transfer window will be. You can't look up anything. It's awful from a football point of view. But
I know poor contract Dave must be tearing his hair out.
I know. I think that's all he did as well, wasn't it?
Secretary, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he's all right. He's on lockdown as well, but
he'll be in his slippers now.
More power to you. If you're on lockdown and you're financially able to bat on, then brilliant. But if you're not, hopefully things are okay and people are getting looked after, because that's the main thing. People who are getting ill and people who are struggling financially. It's just such a crazy.
It's dark, isn't it? It's a dark time.
Yeah, it's totally unprecedented in modern society. You know, there's been things that have happened which have been major moments in history, things like 9/11 and so on. And this is another one. This will be referred back to as the example for pandemics for forevermore now. An actual global pandemic. It's something crazy to live through, but hopefully, we all come out of it soon and with as little negative impact as possible.
That's the aim now, is basically to damage limitation, really, isn't it? It's just to make sure we keep as many people safe as possible, stop it spreading.
Yeah, I mean, I was rooting for it a few weeks ago, hoping it got cost Liverpool the title, but now I think I'd like to retract that now. It's not worth it. Just give them the title. If we could go back and, like, you can get rid of it, I'd definitely do it now.
Give them the title now while it's on lockdown so there's no parade. I'll have that.
Yeah, that'll do.
By the time this is over, lads, just thinking then, we might actually see some of Jean-Philippe Aubameyang. Maybe he might actually finally be fit when this is over.
Wouldn't put it past him to get it, coronavirus.
Oh, that man.
I hope not.
That poor fella. He's been in lockdown for 6 months anyway, because no one's seen him. I don't even think he's been sighted at any games or any, like, there's no footage of him on the club social media. So
from just when he's like,
getting up out the house, this happens.
From what I've heard, he's like missing a quadricep or something.
Yeah, well, spare a thought for him. He's watched all of his box sets. What's he going to do?
Oh, yeah. He's making his own box sets now.
I know.
But, yeah, so how are you holding up? What shows have you guys been watching?
I mentioned a few. Red Dwarf, I watched some of that. A lot of British comedies. Fuck off. Blackadder, Mr. Bean, Bottom, just a lot of, like, silly 90s, 80s BBC comedy and some American as well.
On that note, I've had Keeping Up Appearances on.
I've not seen it.
That's an absolute belter, honestly. Honestly, it's a friggin' belter.
I had a mate growing up whose mum was just Hyacinth Bouquet, who always makes me laugh.
I know loads of people like that. It's about the company you keep.
Tell you what else I've been watching, and if you're not on it, then you should really get on it, because it really, like, gets you through the hours of the day. Curb Your Enthusiasm with Larry David.
Oh, fantastic.
That's brilliant. And there's about 10 series of it as well, so there's loads of it to get through.
You know, I love those shows. Like, imagine rewatching the entire, like, back catalogue of The Simpsons.
Oh, you'd be flying for about 10 seasons and then start to really struggle from there.
You start to feel, like, the decline in quality then, wouldn't you?
Mm. Yeah, if you watch it in reverse, you might be able to get through it.
That'd probably give you the lift, actually, yeah. I mean, speaking of all that, they had the Simpsons movie on Sunday, didn't they? Like, which is basically a movie about people getting locked down in a dome.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I just thought that was such an ironic, like, sort of, I don't know, it's an ironic little jibe, really, given the scenario everyone's in at the moment.
Someone in the control room's well put that on for a joke.
Yeah.
Well, I came home last night and Mrs. had on Zombieland. It's like, oh God, don't put this on. Bottle will go. That's what we'll end up with.
Yeah, it's been a nice mixed bag of shows, isn't it?
Yeah, to be honest, I haven't even got started yet because I've only just gone into lockdown. But I don't know whether I'll probably have the time to do both, but I could watch, a classic again, rewatch The Sopranos, or I want to get my wife into watching Band of Brothers. She's agreed to do it. It's not usually a cup of tea, but it's such a good show, and I'm like, oh, you need to watch this, it's amazing. But then I also want to watch some other, like, new stuff that I've not seen before. Is it, I haven't, don't know anything about this, but I saw, my mate was telling me that it was going to be worth watching, something on Netflix called Tiger King documentary or something like that.
I've not actually heard of that just yet.
It's only just catching on, I think. Like, not catching on as in, like, it's getting popular now. I think it's a surreal documentary about a surreal person, but I'm going to look at stuff like that as well.
It's a perfect watch for surreal times that we're in.
Yeah, true.
Well, anyway, guys, we're going to move on to the actual show now. And so we asked around on Twitter over the last week or so for requests for which season you want to start off with. And you guys chose definitely our best league campaign of the Premier League era as of yet, the 2004-05 season. Plenty to discuss through that season. And, of course, I've got Terry and Paul with me to discuss it. So, guys, 2004-05 season, how did you feel going into the season?
Not optimistic, to be honest. We'd season before, we'd finished 17th and 6 points above the relegation zone. we had an awful season. We, you know, it was Moyes' sophomore season. We just come the season before that, he just finished seventh. So hopes were high, but I don't feel like things, problems with the team were addressed properly in the transfer window. We'd spent all the previous summer chasing Sean Davis for central midfield, because central midfield was a weak point.
Right, yeah.
We ended up with, you know, some players who came, who became useful and whatever. You know, we bought Nigel Martin, Kevin Kilbane, James McFadden, and loaned Francis Jeffers. But the season was terrible. We won like one away game all season, which, you know, has become in vogue now. But at that time, was awful, and we just literally, there was nothing to write home about for that season. And then obviously then the summer came after staying up by so, you know, small a margin, and our crown jewel was bought by Man United, sold Wayne Rooney for what feels now like a paltry fee of 27 million guaranteed, rising to 30. Only brought in two players, which were Marcus Bent, a journeyman forward who'd had a, you know, knocking on 10 clubs, I'm sure, at that time already. And Tim Cahill, who had got a little bit of national attention with the season before, with Millwall's run to the FA Cup final. And, you know, certainly wasn't, you know, seen as a poor buy. He was, people were, you know, happy to sign Tim Cahill, but they didn't expect big things from him because he was a small fee from the Championship. And yeah, and that was it. We went to the season. You know, expectations were very low given the big sale and the poor performance the season before. And then, well, we'll get into what happened next.
Yeah, Paul, how did you feel going into the 04-05 season?
I just remember it being dominated all that summer with, is Rooney going to stay or is he going to go type thing. I remember it was on the front of the papers, the back of the papers rather, every week. Rooney was, and his agent Paul Stretford were basically saying, that's it, we're upping them and leaving, and Everton were basically on the surface begging them not to, but as we found out since, behind the scenes, we were kind of gently pushing them out the door because we just were so desperate for the money to stay afloat. But I was only 10 at the time. It was mine and Terry's second season ticket holders. We were going in, and I, being young, was just really devastated that, you know, the kids who everyone had on the back of the shirts was going, thinking,
that was it,
we're selling our best player, we're not signing any big names to replace him, we're just getting all these people I've never heard of, where's this going to leave us? So I was basically just expecting us to be completely irrelevant to mid-table, and it was just really sad because you knew Rooney was going to go on and win titles with United, and Liverpool were getting this, you know, this big in fashion manager in Rafa Benitez. So a lot of teams had reasons to be excited, whereas we were just poor old Everton stuck off in the corner, selling our best player and getting nobodies in to replace him. So it was kind of one of them. I was hoping it would be better than the season we just seen, where we were really, really bad and we'd finished right down the league, but I wasn't expecting anything at all.
Yeah, I mean, I personally was 8 when this was all going on, and I was actually on holiday when Rooney got sold. And I just remember thinking, at that time, I'd only been watching Everton for about a year anyway, and I was starting to get my head around some of the players, and all the players who had started to get to know, the likes of Rooney had gone. I think Thomas Radzinski left that summer as well, who was another, like, sort of, not outstanding, but he was probably one of the key players of that side. He went, and I think a large proportion of the squad was released that summer. And I just remember, like, watching the opening game of the season. We got beat off Arsenal in Spain, and I couldn't identify with any of the players. I only really recognised Gravesen, I think, and Carsley. And I think other than that, I didn't really know many of the players. And I was like, where's this going? Obviously, yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, it was just kind of that feeling of, like, what's down for us as a club? Like, there's no reason to get excited at all. And it just felt like we were, at very best, going to just stay where we were, if not go down completely. I mean, I didn't think we were going to get relegated. I wasn't worried about that. But it's just, why are all these other clubs getting to go to cup finals and challenging for leagues and things like that when we're just stuck to and nothing. Every weekend, I'm going to go watch my team, and I'm either going to get absolutely battered, or they might scrape a win against an equally crap team. It just felt like, ugh. It felt like there was no real reason to really get excited about football. It was just something that you did at the weekend, and then you didn't think about the rest of the week.
I mean, I know that feeling all too well over the last couple of years, so you've just triggered me a little bit there. But yeah, it was one of those, wasn't it? I think I remember like the first couple of games, and I mean, we won a couple of the first few games even before Rooney left, and I was like, this is all right, but I didn't really know any of the players, and obviously all I'd ever known, I started watching Everton when I was about six, and all I'd ever known was Wayne Rooney playing for Everton and scoring goals for Everton. And then once he left, I was like, what's this now? And anyway, I think it was one of them. I didn't really pay too much attention to football around that time, but I think I just remember, obviously, what happened next. Rooney left, and then obviously we got into September, and I think we won a couple of games on the spin, and then I started to see our name in the, like, high, getting higher and higher in the table, and I was like, well, yeah, we're doing all right here, aren't we? And that was like, I wasn't really like, I didn't really grasp football completely at that point, whereas I'd just watch Everton and see how Everton got on and see how we were doing in the league and stuff, and to see us like doing better and better, I was thinking, hey, this is getting good. And I remember that was the sort of consensus around everyone in my family. I'm not sure you guys were going to games then, were you? So you might have a better ability to gauge what the vibe was like when this was going on in the sort of September time when we picked up a few wins on the spin.
Well, we started the season at home to Arsenal and lost 4-1. So obviously that was like compounding with everything else. It was like, oh, here we go again. This is like the great Arsenal teams, remember? So it wasn't like it was a, you know, bad thing. Like now, if you lose to Arsenal, you're losing them to a peer, like a competitor, like same level sort of team. Whereas back then it was like, you know, they were the top dogs.
The best team.
But
coming off the Invincible season, weren't they?
Yeah. Well, that after that, the form picked up. Like you're talking about September. Like by the end of September, we'd won three games on the spin in September, and we'd won five overall and drawn one after the Arsenal result.
So it was always against United at Old Trafford as well.
Yeah, remembering. Exactly. So you know that what Moyes had landed on for that season, which is what he never had the season before, or even the season before that, when he still finished seventh and did all right. Is a settled team. Like the squad, you mentioned it before, a lot of players were released or sold and not replaced, but he'd stripped the squad back to bare bones, but he'd landed on a team that clicked and gelled. And I always think now, when Leicester won the league, it reminded me a lot of this season for under Everton. Obviously, totally different scenario, and they had a world-class, you know, goal scorer in Jamie Vardy, and you know, a few world-class players like spotted around with like Kante and Mahrez. But the sort of ethic of the team reminded me of the Moyes 2004-05 season, where all the players played pretty much injury-free every week, and the system complemented them all, and they had that continuity, and they all knew each other inside and out, and they all worked together. Moyes landed on the 4-1-4-1 formation, and he literally had 14 players that he turned to, like the same 11 most weeks, give or take one or two, you know, depending on injuries. And he used Duncan Ferguson as an impact sub, which what an impact sub he was, you know, with the
impact's on. A good word for it.
Yeah, I mean, he couldn't really start many games at that point, but you know, he had, you know, in the 4-1-4-1, the Carsley would sit and, you know, shield the back four of Stubbs and Weir with that centre back. You know, they weren't the fastest in the world, but they had the experience, and with Carsley in front of them, they had protection. And then I'm not going to name the whole team, obviously, because we're going to mention that later. But Marcus Bent up front. Now he hardly ever scored, but he found that perfect like sort of role in that team, where he would just run the channels and just work hard off the ball, and you know, bring other players into play, the other midfielders. And that paid dividends, especially in the first half of the season. So when we got past that Arsenal game, we put a run of wins together. And I remember thinking at the time, going, oh, this is, you know, not so much, well, this could, you know, see us fine in a relegation fight, you know, because we've got all these points on the boards early. But I thought, well, this is a good platform. So if the form takes a wobble when we start getting injuries, because this team's already, this squad is very small, we've got these points on the board. That was my feeling at the time, that this won't last because the team, the squad's too small. We'll get to December and start, you know, the wheels will start coming off. But, you know, as we'll touch on in a minute, wasn't the case.
I think a very interesting point you made there was about the 4-1-4-1. This season came right off the back of a very similar team to that Everton side, Greece, winning the Euros with the same formation, with a very threadbare national squad in comparison to the likes of, say, England or Spain or Germany. And they went and won the Euros. How much do you reckon that might have played on Moyes' mind when he was sort of analysing his squad at the end of the season?
I mean, it's a fair shout. I mean, I didn't even remember. I know I obviously remember that Greece team, but I didn't even remember they played 4-1-4-1. But I mean, I believe you. It makes sense. That was it was a good template, a good model of, you can, you know, cover the inadequacies of some of your players, and you know, you know the inadequacies in flair, and like, you know, one-on-one skill by just. It lends itself to hard work and hard running. There was no, you know, skillful, you know, let me think. There was no Pienaar in this team. There was no one who, there was no, you know, Lukaku. There was no standout player who could, you know, take on opposition players. It was all about graft. It was all about hard work and just fighting for each other. And that's a lot of the wins that we got were 1-0s, 2-1s. We didn't blow any team away.
No, we didn't. That's a really good point, actually. I think we went on a good run of winning every game by the odd goal. I think pretty much every game, and certainly before Christmas, was a 1-0 or a 2-1, or if we were really lucky to be entertained, a 3-2.
Yeah, well, that's the defence was the biggest thing. It was the defence was the biggest thing, because once we got in ahead, especially in the home games, there was always the feeling that, like, we've got this now because we won't concede. We've got a strong enough structure and, you know, enough fight in the team to hold on to the lead. That was certainly my feeling at the time. I would celebrate the first goal going in at Goodison sometimes as if we'd won the match. I was that confident as time went on.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And I mean, I'll be honest, that season instilled that mentality in me for a long time. Scoring the first goal usually meant we'd go on to win. And I think I probably held a little bit of that all the way through until Martinez's second season, when stuff happened. It was a pretty grim season for conceding goals. So I think all the way through the Moyes era from then on in, I think we had this idea of if we got one, certainly if we got two, we were going to win. I'm not sure, like, what your stance was on that, Paul, like, when you were in, if you were going to games, like, the vibe in the ground, was there a sort of belief there all the time that we were going to win these games?
No, from what I remember. Maybe I was too young, but as I said earlier on, I would just typically go to games and hope that we'd win and be really happy when we did, but then just kind of forgot about it afterwards. Like, I wasn't thinking, oh, this is brilliant, we're going to qualify for something here, we're going to build something. It was just kind of a feeling of, if we go in and into a game and we just work really, really hard, we should be okay. And that happened more often than not, because if you look at the teams that were in the league that season, there was a lot of teams that just didn't graft as much as we did. That, like Terry touched on, you had Allardyce of Bolton. They were good grafters. They finished, I think, fifth or sixth.
Right below us,
sixth,
I think.
Yeah. But you had a lot of mid-table teams in the league that season who you'd think would probably be similar levels to us quality-wise, who just didn't have the graft that we did. Like the likes of Birmingham, Charlton, Blackburn, Newcastle, Man City before they had all the money.
Middlesbrough had better players than us. Like, you know,
Middlesbrough had a really good team that year when I look back at the squad they had. Man City, yeah, as well.
Yeah, City had a few people, didn't he? Like,
yeah, Anelka, like Ryan Phillips.
Honest pros, Richard Dunn. But the thing is, we had that as well. Like Alan Stubbs, David Weir, Graveson, Carsley, even Nigel Martin, even though he was older than the rest of them, he was having probably his best season for years. We just had a lot of solid pros all having great seasons at once and staying injury-free. And I distinctly remember getting picked up from school by my mum, and she used to always have the paper in the back of the car to take it home with us. And I remember like getting older and looking at the back, and I think it was around November time. We just won the game at the weekend. I think it was a 1-0. I remember specifically Marcus Bent celebrating. I remember looking at the paper, and it said on the back of the Echo, Everton up into third. I remember like going, as I said earlier on, I'd never really paid attention to where we were in the table. I mean, I knew we were down the bottom, but it didn't register with me that we were specifically very high. I remember thinking Everton, it was Man United top, and I think Arsenal second, or maybe Chelsea. It was
Chelsea
one of those.
They won the league, yeah, I think, didn't they?
Yeah. I think it was Chelsea United, looking back now. It was Chelsea top, United second, and Everton third. I'm thinking, oh, bloody hell. Even when I was 10, like, Everton in third place. This is mad, this.
I couldn't comprehend this. It's like the same for me.
Yeah. It's like, oh my God, like, I hope we stay there. And ultimately, we ended up, Arsenal got above us, and we ended up dropping down into fourth, but. And we were quite a distant third as well, I must say, at the time. But I remember thinking, look how high we are in the league there, and we've got a good portion of the season's gone. I wonder where we're going to finish. If we can finish dead high, then maybe we are onto something. But yeah, just as I said, touched on earlier on, I didn't really go into games, at least not for the first half of the season, thinking this is brilliant. This, like, what a time to be an Evertonian. It was just for me. Go and see me football, Dean, today. I hope we lose. I hope we win. Yeah, I'd scratch that. I hope we win.
I knew it.
It would be rubbish if we lose. But we just kept winning games, or getting good draws, like United away and things like that, and just thinking, this is quite good. This, I'm actually enjoying being an Everton fan. And then, Teddy touched on, ultimately we did well enough that we ended up finishing in the top four, which is unthinkable now.
Yeah, well, I think that was the thing. Like, at that time, I wasn't really like that clued up on football at this stage. I was only really into watching Everton, and I didn't actually know what the Champions League was at this time. I think the start of that season, I was like, and we were in third place, and I can remember my dad vividly saying to me, "Oh, James, this is fucking brilliant," and I was like, "Yeah, it's good, isn't it?" And I was like, "Yeah, we could get in the Champions League." He was like, "What's that?" And I was like,
and then it was honestly, we forget the Champions League. In that first half of the season, we were so strong, and obviously finished the year a few points off first. We were singing, "We're going to win the league," and you could believe it, because we were so resilient, especially at home. Like, at home, even when we conceded the first goal, I mean, obviously you guys might have felt different, but I felt like, yeah, we'll get back into this. I was like, the defeats were so few and far between that I always just felt like no one will get the better of us. No one will. There might be teams, you know, we lose on the odd day, but I was thinking, you know what? No, you know, if we could have played, I know everyone can say this, but I just felt like if we could have played every game at Goodison, we'd have romped the league. That, because that's just how strong we were as a home crowd and as a home team at that point. And, you know, before we, you know, move on to the second half of the season, there's one game we've got to touch on. I think it's still Paul's favourite ever game in December when we won the Merseyside derby.
Yeah, definitely we've got to touch on that. So I'll leave this one to Paul. Derby day.
Brilliant memory.
Yeah.
Big dinner on his face there.
11th of December 2004. Now, I remember the build up to this game like a few weeks before, and I was really not looking forward to it because the season before we'd been spanked by Liverpool 3-0 at Goodison. I remember Michael Owen scoring two and Harry Kewell getting one in my first ever derby, and the Anfield derby a few months later, we got a 0-0 by the grace of God. Nigel Martin made about 10 amazing saves to squeak a 0-0 for us, which ended up being a really big result in hindsight. But I just remember going into it thinking, Oh, like, I don't want to get battered by Liverpool again. All the Liverpool fans in school are going to be laughing.
I remember. By this point, by the way, I'd realised what the Champions League was at this stage, and I was watching some of the games, and obviously Liverpool had just had that mad win against Olympiacos the few days before in midweek going into this game, and I just remember going into it thinking, I'll be happy with a draw.
Yeah, I remember just really hoping. I really hope we don't lose. I don't want to lose to Liverpool. Like, all my mates are going to laugh at me. And we were actually going into the game in a bit of form, because I think since the start of November, we'd only lost like one game to, I think,
Chelsea.
It was only Chelsea
beating us.
Yeah. We were going into the game having picked up quite a few wins, and I will always remember this specifically. I don't know if Terry remembers it. I remember talking to him in my bedroom at the time, and I remember saying to him, I'm really not looking forward to that Liverpool game, you know. And this was before we'd played Bolton the week before. And I remember Terry saying to me, you know what, there's not a lot of difference between Bolton and Liverpool, you know. If we can beat Bolton, then I think we've got a really good chance of beating Liverpool as well. And I was like, oh, well, I hope so. And then we ended up beating Bolton at Goodison. And I remember thinking, yes. I remember Terry said to me, if we beat these, then we're good enough to beat Liverpool. I've got no reason to be scared of Liverpool now. We've just beaten Bolton, and we're in a good run of form. And in the game itself specifically, I remember it being quite a scrappy game. There was not a lot of clear-cut chances for either team. Cahill famously misses that.
Both
7-8 yards out, free header in the box. You put your house on Cahill to bury it.
Trademark, isn't it?
Yeah. Cahill himself could not hope for a better chance in a football match, and he puts it wide. And everyone just thinking, oh, that's the chance. He's missed it. We're not going to win this game now. And that was early in the game as well. So even back then, we were thinking. Yeah, I remember thinking, because it was down at the Park End, everyone just thinking, if we were going to score, that was the chance. It's Liverpool. You just know they're going to be jammy and get one now, and we're going to be ruin that chance. And then the game was just dead scrappy. And then just a random passage of play, we just come forward into the box, we throw a cross in, they don't deal with it. I think it was Osman just got the ball, and he couldn't find a gap, so he just laid it off to Carsley, who was just sitting there completely unmarked, and he lets go a really tame shot. If you watch it back, it's a rubbish effort by him, to be honest. If he'd have 9 times out of 10, Chris Kirkland just scoops that up, thank you very much, and everyone just goes, man, going, what a chance that was. He had a free shot, and he just P-rolled it into his arms, but thankfully Kirkland, I think, just maybe he couldn't see it, the angle he was standing.
Well, it's only when I was doing my own work ahead of this show that I found out, I think that was actually Kirkland's last game for Liverpool. He injured himself during that game, so I don't know whether that affected him. Saving that, but
yeah, I don't know about that. He definitely was unsighted, you can tell, like, because he was enormous, Kirkland. Like, he could take up the old goal, but I think, you know, with the scrum of players in front of him, it was just one of them things where he was completely unsighted. And by the time he reacts, the ball's past him. But obviously, you know, the goal goes in, and then, you know, Goodison just erupts, like, everyone's going, you know, mad. Because then I genuinely still, even though it was Liverpool, you still felt like, we're going to win this because we've gone 1-0 up. We'll, you know, I know times have changed a lot since then, but you know, you felt like we'll hold on. And then obviously you get the famous, you know, pile on photograph.
With all the players. Cahill with his fist up in the air.
Yeah, all the players on each other and Cahill, just like that. It just felt great. Like, not enough of that.
How much it meant to the players as well. Like, the players themselves probably thought, like, after Cahill's early chance, like, they probably didn't think a goal was going to come for them. And then a goal to just happen like that, and randomly, you can see, like, the relief on all the faces, all doing the parley on, going, I can't believe we've done it. We've scored past them, and we're in touching distance of winning. I'm glad you think, Terry, that you're going to hang on, because I didn't.
I didn't either.
I was
absolutely petrified we were just going to put one in. And I remember, late in the day, Nigel Martin
made a save,
and I think he fumbled one in the box. Like, he had it in his hands, and he fell backwards, and he let go of it. We had to clear it. And I remember the time ticking down, everyone going, blow the whistle. And the ball came into the Gladys Street, and the Gladys Street was taking ages throwing it back. Like, no, everyone's celebrating, going, way, throwing it. And everyone's going, no, like, they're going to get about 10 minutes extra time. And I remember specifically, just before the whistle went, some fan, I'll never forget this as long as I live. This is kind of my Eddie Canva moment. Joe, the fella in the FA Cup final, runs on. I always specifically remember this moment. I'll remember it all my life. A fella in the far left-hand corner of the Gladys Street ran on the pitch in his black coat and his woolly hat, and he grabbed the corner flag and he ran off with it in his hand.
That's right, like, yeah.
Absolutely bizarre, because he thought, like, we've won it. We've actually done it. We've won a derby. And I remember everyone just going absolutely mad. And then finally, when the final whistle went, just the absolute joy of it. Oh, my God, we beat Liverpool. I'm going to get to laugh at all my mates. That feeling I had last year of when we got spanked by them and they were giving it all sorts to me. I'm going to get to give it back to them now. And I was absolutely over the moon. It's, to this day, the best feeling I've had coming out of an Everton match. I was 10 years old, and it just absolutely captured me.
I mean, we'll probably touch on that season maybe at some point, but I thought that about the derby 2 years later when we won 3-0. That was probably the best I've ever felt coming out of an Everton game, without a doubt. It's just the thing, the kind of game, really, the kind of feel that only a derby can do for you, which is probably why we're so miserable these days, because we haven't won one for so long.
Yeah. But yeah, great game, great results. But on to the rest of the season now. I mean, we get to January, don't we? And then disaster strikes.
Gravesen goes to Madrid.
The player of the season up to that point was without doubt Thomas Gravesen. That 4-1-4-1 formation gave him the free role in terms of midfield. So he could. Everyone thinks it was Cahill behind the striker. It wasn't, but Cahill was playing deeper as a number eight at that point. And he was arrived late in the box and scored his headers and what have you. But Gravesen was the playmaker. He was the one who controlled our play. And if you watch it online, you can see like those masterclass videos of, I think David Moyes has got one explaining how he used to play with the overlapping fullbacks of Coleman and Baines. But he'd also... there's also one by Tim Cahill where he talk about that this season we're talking about. And he goes through a few of his other seasons, but he mentions when it comes to this season that he wasn't the attacking midfielder, it was Gravesen. So he's our player of the season up until that point, and we basically, he gets an offer from Real Madrid. Like, it's just unprecedented. You know, he was playing well, but a move to Real Madrid, and he was out of contract in the summer. Unbelievable. Like, no one could believe it. And I'm sure at one point the Spanish press said that he were after a defensive midfielder, which he wasn't at all at Everton, but Lee Carsley was. So he's like, have they bought the wrong player? Are they buying Gravesen thinking they're buying Carsley because they both look so alike? But he goes, and we replace him on loan with a loan deal for one Mikel Arteta. Any memories of a... of that coming about and what you thought? Did anyone remember Arteta's first game?
Just before we come to that, before we go off Gravesen, do you remember who I got on the back of my first Everton top, Terry, 2 days before he left?
Was it Gravesen?
Gravesen. And I remember you telling me not to, because he was getting linked to Real Madrid, and it was kind of like everyone was just resigned to the fact that he was going to go. I think he told the club that he wanted to be sold. And everyone was just like, well, we can't stand in the way. We can't not let him go to Madrid. And I remember loving Gravesen that much, thinking, I'm going to get him on the back of my shirt. I'm going to get him on the back of my shirt for Christmas.
And then if I get him on the back of my shirt, he won't go.
And he went. Yeah, I wouldn't listen. Guy was glued himself into thinking that we wouldn't sell him because he was our best player and everyone loved him. And then he went, and I didn't get one word out of it. And then I think that summer, afterwards, 6 months after, because I bought the kit in December or early January, and that summer, after the season had finished, I ended up giving the kit away to, like, Africa. Do you remember when you used to make those shoeboxes for the kids' school?
Oh, yeah.
I put that kit in it 6 months after I bought it, with his name on the back and everything. That's, you have to spend money getting the prints on and all that. Spent all £50-60 on it and everything, my mum did, and yeah. I just gave it away because I couldn't wear it.
But I had to tell you, but you wouldn't listen.
But honestly, I think... I remember Gravesen going, and I remember the results in January were really, really poor, if I remember rightly. We lost
a couple of games. They completely fell off a cliff. We'd been, like, close to the top at Christmas, but then January through February, we just lost a lot. Like, just look here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 6 defeats between January and March, and about I think it was two or three draws. So the wins dried up and we started to fall away from the very top of the table, but managed to keep, like, you know, stabilise around like fourth and fifth. And you can start to see then, you know, like where teams could, you know, who we're going to be competing for. And obviously ourselves, Liverpool and Bolton. But the win in the league dream died in January, let's say.
Yeah, that was around the time we went from third, we fell out of third and went to fourth, and then we stayed in fourth the rest of the season, didn't we? It was a bit of a fight in the final few months between us and Liverpool to see if they could overhaul us, and they never quite managed it. But going back to Arteta, when he came in, maybe I'm too young to remember, but I didn't really notice him at the time. He kind of flew under the radar. I remember he came in and wore the number six, didn't he, first, for a couple of seasons. And he looked like a tidy player. And I remembered him because I think I'd played with him on like FIFA with Rangers, because he played for Rangers, didn't he, before we got him. And I remember he was really good at taking free kicks. So it's just that classic thing of, well, this player's good on FIFA, I hope he's good in real life. And did he score like a Belton free kick at Goodison? His first
he did. Goal for Everton. He did.
That's something that's... I can't remember what game it was.
Palace. It was one of the few games. I think we won 3-0. It was one of the few games we won by more than one goal. So
I'll always remember when he scored that free kick, he ran and celebrated in front of the Palace fans, but not like obnoxiously. He didn't realise they weren't Everton fans. So he just ran to that part of the pitch because that's where it was close to him. And obviously got a torrent of abuse off the away fans, and he had to apologise after the game going, sorry, I didn't realise that was where the away fans were. I just ran over because I thought it's all fans. Whether he did or not, I don't know. But he seemed pretty sincere at the time.
He's a bit of a slick wind-up merchant, so you think, Arteta, I reckon he did it on purpose.
Yeah. I mean, like Paul said, he came in and he was a little bit under the radar at first. He didn't have even half the sort of influence that Gravesen had on the team, but you could see he was a good footballer. You could see, you know, what was to come with him. And obviously he grew into that role and became, you know, one of the most influential players in the team for years to come. But at first, he was not struggling to find his feet in terms of the physicality. But I think the role in the team was so, you know, defined, and he had to sort of grow into that. But you could just see, like, this was before his major injury as well. And you could just see how, like, good on the ball he was. And you know, it was before he became that sitting midfielder, that playmaker. He would just, you know, go forward with the ball, and he would just glide and no one could get it off him. And it was just like, this is a quality player we've got here. On loan, he was at Rangers, but he was at Sociedad by the time we signed him. And I'd had him on, like, do you remember LMA Manager?
Oh, yeah.
I had him on that. I was like, just because I liked his name, I just thought his name, Arteta, was a cool name. And I was 15, so I was into doing shit like that at the time. So I was like that, going, oh, well, he was quality for me on the game, so I hope he's quality in real life. And he went on to be. So, yeah, I mean, that is what you call trading up in the long term. It didn't feel like it at the time, but to swap Gravesen, who was having a little purple patch in what was really a sort of middling career. He, you know, decent player, but didn't really hit the heights despite a move to Real Madrid. But Arteta was just a much superior player, but he obviously had to bed in. As you know, now everyone accepts that players take a season to bed in from another league, but Arteta didn't take that long. He just took a few weeks, I think.
Definitely. I mean, I think I recall, like, by the time he was bedding in, we started to maybe get the odd win again. And I think I remember a specific game, a 3-1 away win against Aston Villa, where we were absolutely brilliant. Mm-hmm. I think that was probably the first game where I really remember noticing Arteta as a, like, potential star of the team. I'm not sure, like, whether you guys remember that game, but I think Kale scored twice and Osman scored a really good team goal as well. I think it was a really, like, accomplished away performance, which we, despite how well we'd done, we'd not really done one of those that season. So I think that sort of lifted people a bit.
Yeah, I mean, I sort of remember it. It hasn't stuck out in my mind for the games this season. But I was, I like I said at the beginning of the show, I was just so happy to be winning away games because that season before we were so terrible. But we cracked on towards the end of the season. Obviously, another big point of our season was the away Merseyside derby. which we lost. Let's not dwell on the game and the result, but the thing I always take away from it was, you know, as they do, the Reds all, the players, fans, manager, they all celebrated like they'd won the race for fourth, like in that game. They didn't go fourth with that win, but they acted like, well, we beat Everton now. Like, you know, Pepe Reina running the length of the pitch and acting like they'd beat us, like to fourth place. Because at that point, Bolton had fell away a little bit. Not like out of the race entirely, but it was seen as more or less a two-horse race between Everton and Liverpool for fourth place. And that derby was seen as like a big six-pointer. And, you know, it probably was, but I think that lit a fire under our players a little bit, saying, well, they haven't took it off us. Why are they celebrating like that? But, we know what the Reds are like, you know. Bad losers, even worse winners. But the rest of that season, I think it just gave us that little bit of fight. Well, no, let's get over
Instantly, though, I'll be honest, because I remember the game after the Liverpool game was actually on my birthday, and it wrecked my birthday. we got beat off West Brom, who were bottom of the league, in the next game at the Hawthorns. And at that point, I remember everyone saying, Joe, because I think I remember the year that Moyes' first full season, we were in the top four ourselves around March anyway, and we ended up not getting any Europe at all. And people were saying, we're going to miss out on them. You know, the way Everton fans are, I think we're naturally a bit pessimistic. I think we lost that West Brom game, and I remember loads of fans going, we're not even going to get in the top seven now. And, you know, all of them sound bites started to come out. And I think at that stage, I was genuinely worried I was convinced we weren't getting top four, but I was even worrying about that when people were saying it. And I thought, oh, God. And then I started to realise what it was truly like to be an Evertonian.
Yeah.
Anyway, the next game after that was the Palace game at home, which was Arteta's first goal. And obviously, I think we won that one quite, I think it was 3-0, maybe 4-0.
Just before we go on to the game after Palace, because I know what it is, and it's a memorable one, but one thing we've overlooked is bringing in James Beattie in January.
Oh, God, I don't want to forget about him.
Yeah, but I remember him vividly coming in and getting unveiled on the pitch against... Oh, it was a game we won. It was a night game. I remember him coming out with his silver watch on and his Everton kit.
It was a boss last-minute goal again that game, 2-1 against Portsmouth. I remember that one.
Yeah, Beattie was a really good... he had a reputation for being a really good young English striker from Southampton. And I think he'd had an England call-up by the time we signed him. And it was just kind of gave us that feeling that I touched on earlier on, that the complete opposite of what the summer was. It's like, yes, we've got this big-name signing who everyone knows about and everyone respects. And even team supporters admit he's good. We finally got this boss number nine player. And it just, for whatever reason, it didn't pan out for him. And I think on like his second or third game was when he did that headbutt on William Gallas and got himself sent off and basically just writ his entire season off from that period onwards. Because we signed him in early January, like right at the start of the window, and he only scored one goal before the end of the season, and it was against Southampton away.
You want to talk about wasting a home shirt? I got him on the back of mine. I was old enough to know better as well. He was just... He arrived and he was dead overweight, wasn't he? Like, he was on that... Like, he looked like the player who's eaten James Beattie. Like, he was clear from his photographs, you know, when he signs, like, this... You know, look, you know when... It's not as much of a thing now, but you know when some players used to come back off pre-season and like they'd be big and went at the start and the first picture's back, but then they'd shed
all
the weight.
That's not old. Ashley Williams did that 2 years ago.
Well, it's less common now, but yeah, he came in and he didn't seem in shape, and it was the beginning of a staple of Moyes' era at Everton. The only thing he ever tended to get wrong in the transfer window was strikers, because Beattie was just... On the face of it, I mean, I didn't think this at the time because I was too young, but on the face of it, he was a bad buy. We played 4-1-4-1 religiously, and he wasn't going to play that Marcus Bent role where he was going to work the opposition defenders constantly and chase down, you know, like diagonal balls to, you know, create space higher up the pitch. He was going to stay in and around the box, and that just didn't work. He was effectively a record signing who was only suitable to be coming off the bench, like in that Ferguson role. He wasn't even as good as Ferguson as that.
He was like a Tosin, wasn't he? Just a box striker who could finish it for you if you got it to his feet in the penalty area. But that wasn't how he played, as you said, and it just never worked out for him. As you said, I remember him coming in and he was really round, but I was a kid and you just thought it'll be all right. He'll get a goal and then he'll kick off from there. And
yeah,
never happened. It never happened.
He got the goal, but then he kicked Gallas instead.
He scored against Southampton, and I specifically remember it because I was staying in my best friend's at the time. I used to stay there most weekends, and I think it was a Sunday game. We played Southampton away. It was when Harry Redknapp left Portsmouth and went there for some weird reason. Don't know why he did that, other than that. But we were 2-1 down, and it was like Southampton
Ben
were like right now.
Ben scored a belter, didn't he?
Yeah, and that was basically a goal that relegated them essentially, because they were right down the
Redknapp
bottom.
I remember Redknapp proper kicking off at the end of that game because it was in added time. That was added on to, if I remember rightly.
If you watch it now, it's on YouTube. It's a fairly famous image of him with his hands on his head like that. Even he knows that goal is massive. Bent, I remember it was around that time. Does anyone remember those black and white wristbands when those ones sort of tied together?
Yeah.
They were in fashion, weren't they?
Oh, them. They were boss. I had a few of them.
Yeah, I remember Marcus Bent had one of those on, like around his wrist, and he scored an absolute belter and he ran off celebrating and he was like doing all that with the camera. And I remember thinking as a kid,
I've got them.
It was, as I said, it was a lot of stuff that we were doing that you'd love to see us do now. Just a team that just won't stay down. Do you know what I mean? A team that will always fight and always hopefully grab a goal in the last minute and won't just fall away as soon as we fall behind. We just don't seem to have that anymore. Whereas we had loads of that during that season. And
yeah, I think it's all about the characters you've got, and I think that team was littered with them characters. And of course, one of the main ones was Duncan Ferguson, who we'll move on to that game now. I think we get towards the end of April. Obviously, we're just about keeping our head above water or above Liverpool, so to speak. And then we have Man United at home on a Wednesday night, if I remember rightly.
Yeah,
I think it was a rearranged game, and obviously, we go into it a pretty daunting task. They were in, they were really coming into form by this point. Like, they were still trying to push Chelsea by that point. And I think we weren't that confident by this point, because obviously we'd beaten Palace the week before. But other than that, we'd been in quite bad form. I'm not sure. I didn't go to the game, but did you guys go? How did you feel going into it?
I mean, speaking only for myself, I you know, they were the Man United at that time. Like, it was one of their better teams. That's all, like, you know, their star players had Roy Keane, had Paul Scholes, everyone. And I just looked at it at that point. I was just looked at it like any other game. It was just like, if we turn up, we've got a chance. And it's all about that first goal. Now, this game is thrown up by David Moyes himself as the pinnacle Everton game of his tenure, because they said after the game you could hear the fans singing in the streets. And I remember vividly coming out of the ground singing in on the Gladys Street in the streets, and just, you know, we had a stitched together team, I think. We had a stitched together team. I think Steve Watson
left back,
playing left back. He was a right midfielder. I mean, nominally, that's...
He was a right-back, actually, and he was playing right-wing normally, and then he got shoved over to left-back, I think.
Yeah, he played everywhere, and we had injuries at left-back, and we had to put Steve Watson out there, and it was just one of those siege football-type games where, like, you know, last-ditch defending, and, you know, like, clearing corner after corner after corner, and, you know, like one of those games, it's just epic. It feels like a movie game. Obviously, the ball gets swung in. Duncan Ferguson diving header, runs off, takes his shirt off, swinging it round. Goodison erupts. You know, the Man United players start throwing their toys out the pram. You know,
Gary Neville got sent off for booting the ball at the fans, didn't he?
Yeah, tries to get away with it, kicks the ball into the family enclosure. Nice one, Gary. Paul Scholes got sent off as well.
He volley killed Ban right at the end, didn't he?
Yeah, just a meltdown from Man United because they didn't have it their own way, and it was just that game encapsulated.
Satisfying.
It encapsulated Everton that season, just a team of warriors who got, you know, the injuries to, you know, with no natural fit for players, and you know, they just fought through it, and you know, the diving header, and you know, Goodison erupts and all. It was just fantastic. That was when I think, right, we can't not finish fourth now. It's been on all season. We're going to get into the Champions League. And the tagline for this season, I mean, Champions League, we're having a laugh. Like, that was the thing that people would sing at the time. Obviously, Champions League, you're having a laugh. And then we just adopted it, spun it on its head. And we're like, yeah, we're going to win the league to Champions League. We're having a laugh. And I knew we're coming out of that game going, doesn't matter what happens now, we can't not finish in the Champions League. We've done too much. You know, we've had too many of these games for it not to come off. And the Derby win and that were just my high points of that season.
Well, funny, like after that game, actually, we won that one against United, and then we only won one more game against Newcastle, which was, it all but clinched it. I think Tim Cahill scored the second goal, and I can vividly remember that game as well. By this stage, it was absolutely hooked, by the way. I think it was at the start of the season. I didn't really watch much of the football, but I was absolutely hooked because of what I'd seen. And by that point, I was addicted to watching Everton, and I remember the game towards the end of that season pretty vividly. That was a 2-0 win against Newcastle, which it left us within a point, I think, and then Liverpool played Arsenal on the Sunday, and everyone was like, these will get... Because they weren't that great, that Liverpool team, and I think they were going to the Arsenal team who'd won the league the year before, and we were like, Arsenal do these, we've pretty much got this in the bag. Not sure if you remember the Liverpool game against Arsenal.
I don't remember the game itself, but I remember like the aftermath of it when basically fourth was sealed. I remember like Ken Wright being on Sky Sports News with his wife and his daughter getting the champagne out and all that. As if
that's it, yeah.
Yeah, just being Ken Wright being Ken Wright, like just pure cringe. I remember all that. And we were in the fourth and everyone just loving it, thinking we're actually going to play in the Champions League. I mean, it hadn't dawned on me that we would have to go through a qualifying game against a team that ultimately ended up finishing in the semi-finals. But it was just kind of that feeling of, it's the closest feeling, I imagine, to winning a cup type thing. The only thing I can imagine that beats it is actually going to Wembley and seeing your team win something. Just that feeling of, we've done it. Like, all this thing that's given us so much anxiety for months on end, it's over. We can finally relax and just sit back and enjoy it all now. And it seems like the players did that, because the last we went down to, was it the last game of the season or the second to last game where we went down and played Arsenal?
It was the second to last game because we lost. I think it was 7-0.
7-0, yeah.
7-0. And we had Richard Wright at goal for some reason. It was like a makeshift team. Like, we were like stitched together, but it seemed like even the players who were playing had just gone on their holidays mentally. And
the last two games that season were just peak Everton. They were a sign of what we were in for, to be honest, in the years to come. Because
we lost to Bolton on the final day, and Carsley's on his Crucius, who was such a big player that season.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. We lost 7-0 to Arsenal, which basically skewed the league. So we were the first team to finish in the Champions League with a minus goal difference. But it was because of that game. We weren't like that all season. Then we played Bolton. Obviously, Carsley does his cruciate, who's the key player of the whole season, or you know, one of the key players. And not only that, we're 1-0 at half-time, and they've got a man sent off on the 45th minute. Then the whole second half, we've got a man extra. We concede three goals and lose. Like, just classic Everton. It's like, we're a man up with a goal lead and we lose 3-2 at the end. Like, what the hell? But, you know, the season was done. You know, Champions League, we're having a laugh. Finished fourth, beat Liverpool to it. Bolton Wanderers, I think they finished on level points with Liverpool. They did a little bit of a resurgence.
They ended up sixth, yeah.
Yeah, that was probably their peak under Allardyce, wasn't it?
Yeah. Best ever.
I remember that was Hierro's last ever game, wasn't it? Because they gave him all of our players were like giving him a guard of honour, if I remember rightly, which was another typical Everton thing, because, like, you know, just do that when the game's over, for God's sake.
Yeah, I mean, at that point, I don't think anyone was bothered. We'd finished in the Champions League in a season where everyone was expecting us to go down. But obviously, what was to follow, you know, wasn't the best. But that season was just fantastic. Like I said at the beginning, the Leicester title winning team does not remind me of this team, not based on quality or anything like that, but just the togetherness of the players.
Endeavour as well.
Yeah, and how the team was just so set up to suit all the players, everyone clicking together. If you can get a team that's completely gelled, works hard for each other, and can avoid injuries, you can do anything. Like, so if you could guarantee a season without injuries, you've half done it. It's just no one gets that these days, apart from Liverpool.
Apart from people who inject performance-enhancing drugs and whatnot. But that's for another day. That's the end of the season rewind.
Right, so in the words of the absent but sorely missed Jerry Gibson. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, it is time for a Toffee Blues cage match of Everton wit and might between James and Paul. It's going to be a starting 11 quiz, an old favourite from a match from the season that we covered in the show, the 2004-2005 season. So, guys, are we ready?
Indeed. Yep.
Right, if we could just have a intense quiz music, please. There it is. It's very intense. Right, the match in question is from the 2004-2005 Champions League We're Having a Laugh season. You should, going from the segment, we seem to have a great amount of knowledge on this season. So we've got the home game against Newcastle United, match day 37, and we're going to name one after the other the Everton players in the lineup, including subs used, and we'll the first one to get a player wrong, if the other person gets one right, they win their choice of song to play us out. So who would like to go first? I'm going to, oh no, never mind, I have got something to flip. I was going to just say, ask it and see who got in first, but I'll flip. So I am going to flip the, in true Jerry style, instead of a coin, I'm going to flip the lid of a beard balm, which I have got for my magnificent beard. So
fantastic.
So I'm going to flip it. Call heads or tails?
Tails.
It is heads. Paul, would you like to go first or second?
I'll go second.
He's feeling confident.
Just for clarity, for those who aren't watching the non-filmed podcast quiz section, heads was the side of the lid with the logo on it, and tails was the side from the inside without the logo on it. I do realise now that I didn't explain that, but I assure you that it did land on head. Right.
This just in case anyone files for corruption later down the line.
Yes, exactly. Well, he's chosen to go second, is that right, Paul?
Yes.
Right. James, if you would, name a player from the Newcastle United against Everton game. Sorry, Everton against Newcastle United. It was an Everton home game. Fire it away.
Right, David Weir.
David Weir did play.
Cahill, so I remember that goal he scored at the Gladys Street end where he sent Shea Given the wrong way. Weirdly.
Tim Cahill did indeed play. He started the game. James, your turn.
Mikel Arteta set up both goals, I think.
Correct. Mikel Arteta did start the game. Paul?
Nigel Martin in goal. Oh, God, I hope so, because Richard Wright played the game. before that.
Nigel Martin did start in goal, so you're safe on that one. James, your turn.
Tony Ibbett.
Tony the Shoe did indeed play. He started the game at right back. Paul?
I hope he was playing because he was weirdly my favourite player at the time. Kevin Kilbane.
I forgot all about him being your favourite player at the time. But yes, Zinedine Kilbane did play. He started the game. James, your turn.
Obviously, this was shortly before the typical Everton cruciate injury, so we'll go Lee Carsley.
Lee Carsley did indeed start the game. Got a good rally going on here. Paul, your turn.
Played up front. Marcus Bent. Does it count if he came off the bench?
Yes, it does count if he comes off the bench. Not if he's not used. Marcus Bent did play. Took me a split second longer there because he seems to have started on the right of midfield rather than up front.
Oh.
Well, that makes things interesting. Steve Watson. At left back, I actually think.
Steve Watson did play indeed at left back. Your turn, Paul. You've still got to choose from two starting players and three substitutes.
I'm just trying to think. What are the players we've named? We had Martin in goal. Watson at left back. Hibbert at right back, wasn't he? Marcus Bent on the right wing. Kilbane. David Weir. Who's next to Weir? Or was it Joseph Yobo?
I think it was.
Joseph Yobo did indeed start the game next to Weir at centre back.
I was teasing on that one myself.
Joseph Yobo, yeah.
I'm going to say Duncan Ferguson was the one who played the front if Bent was on the wing.
Duncan Ferguson did indeed start up front.
So that's the whole 11 done, isn't it?
The starting 11 is done. There is only three players that came off the bench to get left. If we do get all of these, we're going to go on to tiebreaker selections.
Right, so we've got three subs who came off the bench.
Indeed.
If Ferguson was up top, Ferguson won't have done 90 minutes, surely. Would there have been Beattie? Beattie come off the bench at some point?
James Beattie did indeed come off the bench.
Yeah, if Ferguson was up top, there's no way he did a full 90. That point is clear.
Right. What else did we add? Ooh, it's tense now. That was the one I was chancing on myself. We didn't have much to choose from at that time. I want to chance my arm and say that I know Moyes was never a fan of two up top, but did James Vaughan come on?
I don't think he broke through at that point, had he?
He scores against Palace.
Did he?
Yeah. He scores his first goal. He was the youngest player, but I'm just trying to think if he actually came on in the Newcastle game. I'm going to say Vaughan.
James Vaughan did not feature in this match.
Is he an unused sub?
Nope, he wasn't even an unused sub. That means Paul is our winner for this week. The two other substitutes who came on where James McFadden on the 74th minute.
Oh, yeah. McFadden, yeah. He was knocking about. What we signed him that summer as well, didn't we? I think.
Alan Stubbs came on the 89th minute. And subs who weren't used were Richard Wright and Alessandro Pistone. Because at that time, you only had five substitutes.
Ah.
And other notes of of interest for the game were the goals were by David Weir on the 43rd minute, Tim Cahill on the 59th minute, and players booked were Carsley, Cahill and Arteta. So, Paul, congratulations. Commiserations, James. It was a, well, it was a much better contest than whenever I play, go off against anyone. It's usually wrapped up a lot quicker than that. But well done to both of you. Very entertaining, Paul.
That's the first time I've won in ages. I think I lost like three in a row to Tom, and I've lost to you, I think, before, and I think I might have lost to Max as well a couple of times.
So no one loses to me. So, in any case, choose your song and enjoy it since you've waited for it. And then obviously tell us a little bit about it so we can legally use it. Why are you picking it?
I'm trying to think of a song that matches the time period we're in, but I actually
had one in mind for that very year, to be honest. Not what sure what yours was. Mine was going to be Lola's theme.
What, Lola's theme? What's that?
Yeah, it was a club anthem from around that time. It was absolutely belted of a tune. I remember the music video was like, it was everywhere around that time, like people at a fairground or something. It was a really, really like feel good tune for a feel good season.
He won't pick a dance theme. There's just no way.
No, it's not my cup of tea, dance music. I will have something upbeat though. I've got it. It's a bit random. I'm not sure if anyone will have heard it, but it's on me Spotify. Wishing Well by Free. It's a 70s song.
Oh, I know, yeah.
Wishing Well by Free, is it?
Free, yeah. F-R-E-E, Wishing Well. It's a 70s tune. I'll pick that because it's quite apt in the sense that I just wish we could have a season like this again. Like, if I had a penny and I could throw it in a fountain, I'd just wish for that feeling of it's Everton against the world. Everyone's written us off, but we don't care. We're just going to turn up and spoil everyone's plans, and we're going to get all these memorable, narrow wins, and we're just going to be so united as a fan base instead of just being so down and just beaten, like, which is what we have been the last few years. I think a lot of people have just lost hope that everything's going to come together. Angelotti's come in, and that's give everyone a big lift and hopeful that something's going to happen in the next few years. But imagine it hadn't been Angelotti who we appointed. Imagine we just pick someone who knows. Imagine if Moyes came back again. Do you know what I mean? How depressed that would have been, or if it had been someone else like Eddie Howe or Dyche. Oh, just that.
Please, yeah. Not Eddie Howe.
Yeah. So.
Well, I can say for one thing that you're already one step on your way to getting that back, because everyone has already written Everton off. We just need to work on the other things now.
Yeah, I'm hopeful that a season like this will come back again, because it is probably my favourite season since going to watch Everton. The only one that comes close to it is Martinez's first season. But this was the season where it felt like we actually achieved something. Do you know what I mean? Finishing fourth, as I mentioned earlier on, the only thing that could probably beat that is winning a trophy, and that hasn't happened in decades. I've never seen us win a trophy, so I just want that feeling of Evertonians are all together, and Evertonians are all proud of the club and happy with where the club's going, and everyone loves the players and everyone's right behind the cause. So fingers crossed that the success is just on the horizon, and that Don Carlo's going to lead us there.
I'll think to that.
Yeah, that's a good note to end this week's podcast on. If James will permit me, I think I'll just outro us out, even though he's been the host for most of the episode and I was a good quiz master.
Knock yourself out, mate.
Thank you to everyone for listening. Hopefully everyone's looking after themselves and doing well. Obviously, sooner the better we can get through this situation, as everyone says. No one likes to say virus or pandemic. They all like to say situation. As soon as we're through this situation, hopefully we can get back to a little bit of normality with as little damage done to people's lives as possible, and just as important to a lot of us, let's hope the football comes back soon and Everton can bat on and play that wonderful football that we know we can play under Carlo Magnifico. So thank you very much for listening to the Toffee Blues. Please visit our website. We've still got content going up there periodically as soon as we can, you know, think of topics to cover with no games ongoing. And all of our information for Toffee Blues Twitter accounts, Instagram, YouTube, all of that will be on that website. All of our contributors will have their information on there as well if you want to follow any of them on social media. Yeah. And everyone just take care of yourselves. We'll all come through this together and hopefully come through it soon. James, thanks for coming on, man. Speak to you soon.
Cheers, mate.
Paul, I'll speak to you probably straight away since we're related.
Very well.
Speak to you soon.
Alright, see you guys. Take it easy. Thanks for listening to the Toffee Blues.
All the Toffees.